I was thinking, you know, since it's, what is it, Judgment Day, Day of Atonement, I was actually thinking it might be really good if I talked about how to go about defending yourself. Doesn't everyone need a good defense? Our justice system, in its lofty ideals, which in many ways has worked quite well, but in many ways also hasn't. We have this notion that everyone is entitled to a defense, right? And everybody gets a lawyer, even if they can't afford one. Well, it's a little different than God and a little different than England. In England, you're presumed guilty until proven innocent. In America, you're presumed innocent until proven guilty. And that's probably just because they do it that way over there, that we do it that way here. I haven't looked up the history to be sure, but it kind of seems like it. It's troubling to think guilty until proven innocent, I guess, huh? But before God, there is no presumption of innocence. And, I guess we could just presume that we're guilty. And that relieves us of a whole bunch of things. But that wasn't really what I wanted to talk about, because I'm aware that we all want to defend ourselves, don't we? Don't we? I mean, when somebody thinks you did something wrong, I mean, even if you think you did it wrong yourself, if somebody's going to bring it up, on a certain number out of 100 days, you pick 50, 60, 99, might you be likely to defend yourself, even if you thought the person had a point, depending on how you felt about hearing about it? Would anybody here think they might possibly defend themselves? Not too many. So, I don't know. There's some examples I've noticed of a defense, and I don't know. I'm just going to read here. I don't know how much I'll have to read here. Let me just take a look here. Okay, I'm just going to start reading in Matthew 26:47. When did I start speaking, by the way? I'd just like to know if anybody does know. What? 5 minutes ago. 5 minutes ago?
Oh, this message, yeah.
What?
This message, yeah.
Oh, no, I meant to the other stuff. Okay, I'll just go. This is after Yeshua had been in the Garden of Gethsemane praying, and his disciples were sleepy, and so they fell asleep. Anyway, then we get to verse 47. While he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up accompanied by a large crowd with swords and clubs, who came from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he who was betraying him gave them a sign, saying, "Whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him." Immediately Judas went to Yeshua and said, "Hail, Rabbi," and kissed him. And Yeshua said to him, "Friend, do what you have come for." Then they came and laid hands on Yeshua and seized him. And behold, one of those who were with Yeshua reached and drew out his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Yeshua said to him, "Put your sword back into its place, for all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword. Or do you not think I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How many is that? 6,000? What? Oh, yeah, a legion is 6,000, right. How then will the scriptures be fulfilled which say that it must happen this way? I'm already noticing that Yeshua does not seem to understand how to defend himself. Aren't you? So, at that time, Yeshua said to the crowd, wait, oh, what did they do? Okay. At that time, Yeshua said to the crowds, oh, okay, yeah, tricked myself. Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as you would against a robber? Every day I used to sit in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But all this has taken place to fulfill the scriptures of the prophets. Then all the disciples left him and fled. Those who had seized Yeshua led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter was following him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Yeshua so that they might put him to death. They did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward, but later on two came forward and said, "This man stated, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" The high priest stood up and said to him, "Do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you?" But Yeshua kept silent. Once again, he seems to be lacking in understanding of defending himself. Like, what would you do? It's disconcerting. So, and the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God." Yeshua said to him, "You have said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" They answered, "He deserves death." Then they spat in his face and beat him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, "Prophesy it to us, you Messiah, who is the one that hit you?" Now Peter was sitting outside the courtyard. Let me see. I should skip ahead here, because this is about Peter and his denial and finding out that Yeshua was right about what was going to happen when push came to shove with him. And then Judas is feeling terrible guilt and going through all that. And then in the 27th chapter, in the 11th verse, it commences here with Pilate. Now Yeshua stood before the governor, and the governor questioned him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Yeshua said to him, "It is as you say." And while he was being accused, by the chief priests and the elders, he did not answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" And he did not answer him with regard to even a single charge, so the governor was quite amazed. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the people anyone prisoner whom they wanted. And at that time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when the people gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Yeshua, who is called Messiah?" It almost seems like he picked Barabbas because he was such a horrible guy, to make the choice easier, so that they would pick Yeshua, because there must have been holding some others. For he knew that because of envy they had handed him over. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas and to put Yeshua to death. But the governor said to them, Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Yeshua, who is called Messiah?" They all said, "Crucify him." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they kept shouting all the more, saying, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves." And all the people said, "His blood shall be on us and our children." Then he released Barabbas for them. But after having Yeshua scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. So, in these passages and the other passages about Yeshua's accusation, can you imagine saying to a judge that had power over your life? Can you imagine just saying, "No, you wouldn't have any power over me at all if God hadn't given it to you"? Can you imagine? It almost seems insulting, you know, to the person with the power, implying that there's a greater power over them that would control what was going to happen to you, and so that it didn't really have much to do with them. Anyway, then you know what you notice when you look at Yeshua is that he made no defense of himself as he was giving himself up for the sake of the indefensible. Nobody that he died for had any defense. He himself could have defended himself just fine and been completely right without any unrighteousness, and could have called thousands of angels to just straighten everybody out and do whatever he wanted. But he endured all these things done against him by not a foreign power, but by his own people, who sought the power of the occupier to put him to death and didn't defend himself. And he laid his life down and gave himself up for the sake of the indefensible, when he was entirely defensible himself and could have handled it on his own too. He didn't need somebody to come and advocate for him. So then what's interesting is, I was thinking about reading these whole passages, but you know, when you see Stephen later in the book of Acts, I wanted to read Stephen's whole sermon, but I'm not going to. But they put false witnesses up against Stephen because Stephen had such wisdom. And so Stephen answers and gives this sermon, essentially, that gives the whole history, really, of what's gone on with Israel. And he's so well-spoken and so wise and given such an answer by the Spirit that there isn't really a good way to counter him. So what they did was they killed him. In response to his defense against the accusations. But he wasn't defending himself. He was defending Yeshua. And you know, I think the outcome was pretty good for Stephen. He didn't concern himself with defending his own skin. He just concerned himself with defending Yeshua. And he did a very good job. It's recorded here for thousands of years. And then he went to be with the Lord. I'm not saying that getting stoned was any fun. I still wonder if he felt it or not, but I don't know. And then a little bit later on, the guy that was standing consenting to his death that went and persecuted the believers just with rabid ferocity afterwards, Paul, is now standing, believing in the same Yeshua, and being accused of all kinds of things in the 23rd chapter of Acts. And I'm just going to read you this part because I think it's really great. Paul, looking intently at the council, said, "Brethren, I have lived my life with a perfectly good conscience before God up to this day." Well, that's quite a claim. "The high priest Ananias commanded those standing beside him to strike him on the mouth." Okay, then Paul says to him, "God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Do you sit to try me according to the law and in violation of the law, order me to be struck?" But the bystanders said, "Do you revile God's high priest?" And I just love this. Imagine yourself there having just been smacked in the mouth by order of the high priest when simply just making a comment about your own conscience. What would you want to say? What would you want to do? And Paul said, "I was not aware, brethren, that he was high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people." That was Paul's defense with regard to what he said about the high priest without knowing he was the high priest. In other words, he didn't defend himself. He kind of repented. Notice that? Anyway, he did need a defense. But he didn't really defend himself on this occasion. It says, "But perceiving that one group were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, Paul began crying out in the council, 'Brethren, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. I am on trial for the hope and resurrection of the dead.'" And that just kind of took care of it because the two sides went at each other. And the heat of the moment was sort of over. I mean, the story is far from over, but I'm gonna stop there. But Paul's whole story, he's accused all along, and he seeks to be heard. And it doesn't go so well for him in terms of, I mean, I wouldn't want to plan my own life to be just like his. He himself says, "I wish all were as I, except for these chains," right? But all of the circumstances lead to a greater and greater defense, the more defense of Yeshua to more and more people because of the persecution against Paul and the things he was accused of. And he doesn't particularly occupy himself with defending himself, though he certainly was able to speak for himself as to the truth of some things. But he put himself in God's hands, just as Stephen did, and just as Yeshua did, because they were all committed into God's hands. And on a day when we're thinking about judgment and our own transgressions and our condition before God, obviously what we should be noticing most is the one who has changed our state before God into that of righteousness, because the righteousness of Yeshua has been attributed to us because of what he did for us. And so our life should be concerned with defending him and not defending ourselves. And there are so many situations where if we just listen to the Lord, it would be so much different. If we do need to be defended, he can take care of that. And if we defend Yeshua and we don't deny him before men, then he will bridge all of the rest of those gaps if we trust in him. So it's so much simpler. I mean, even we who believe in Yeshua, sometimes don't we justify ourselves to God? He sent his perfect son to justify those that couldn't be justified, and to become the defender of the indefensible. We have an enemy that accuses us, but we have the perfect Savior who is our, he is our defense. So I just encourage you to bring the struggles that have to do with defending anything to the Lord and lay them down at his feet. And he will supply to you what you need. We thank you, Lord, for your mercy, redemption, cleansing, restoration of the new life you've given us in Yeshua. Pour your blessings on everyone here in Yeshua's name. Amen. That the atonement that Messiah Yeshua has worked for us is always working, has worked, always will work, and that we can't mess it up. So I'm just going to read this in closing. Therefore there is now no condemnation for those who are in Messiah Yeshua. For the law of the Spirit of life in Messiah Yeshua has set you free from the law of sin and of death. For what the law could not do, weak as it was through the flesh, God did, sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and as an offering for sin, for he condemned sin in the flesh, so that the requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit.
For those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who are according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it does not subject itself to the law of God, for it is not even able to do so. And those who are in the flesh cannot please God. However, you are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you. But if anyone does not have the Spirit of Messiah, he does not belong to him. If Messiah is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, yet the Spirit is alive because of righteousness. And if the Spirit of him who raised Yeshua from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Messiah Yeshua from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwells in you. So then, brethren, we are under obligation, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. For you have not received the spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons and daughters, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Messiah, if indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. For consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers it pangs of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but we also ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons and daughters, the redemption of our body. For in hope we have been saved. The hope that is seen is in the hope. For who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, with perseverance, we wait eagerly for it. In the same way, the Spirit also helps our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we should, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. And he who searches the hearts knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because he intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that God causes all things to work together for the good for those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to become conformed to the image of his Son, so that he would be the firstfruits among many brethren. And these whom he predestined, he also called, and these whom he called, he also justified. And these whom he justified, he also glorified. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare his own Son, but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? Who will bring a charge against God's elect? God is the one who justifies. Who is the one who condemns? Yeshua, the Messiah, is he who died, yes, rather, who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who also intercedes for us. Who will separate us from the love of Messiah? Will tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Just as it is written, for your sake we are being put to death all day long. We were considered as sheep to be slaughtered. But in all these things we overwhelmingly conquer through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels nor principalities, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Messiah Yeshua. So, not only is there no condemnation for us now, but there is victory and hope, and we overwhelmingly conquer in all things because of the blood of Yeshua and his resurrection. We have been saved, we've been forgiven, justified, cleansed, and he is our all in all and has everything we need on this Day of Atonement. And so it's settled.
I believe now we have announcements.